Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
This is January's Three Bean Salad Extra Beans, Part 2.
Back in the day, we had a little natter about elevators. Here's an extra bit for you.
Okay.
Yes, it is recording.
Yeah. I'm recording.
Let's do numbers. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. That's really good.
I think that was our most sort of in-time count we've ever done. Normally, I feel like Ben and I have a certain beat, and then you have a sort of long, there's a long pause.
Henry's got a jazz sensibility when it comes to doing.
Well, I speak on the offbeat.
That's off the page.
One of my unique features, yeah. So you're very much on the onbeat, yeah.
I keep it strictly sort of military marching band style.
Yeah. You're military marching band.
Yeah.
Ben is just the sort of
Baroque classical quartet, neat and trim.
Very much so. Mm.
Yeah. And I'm very much your sort of semi-catatonic in a basement in New Orleans.
Yeah. adapted a section of rubber hosing to a brand new instrument that you're blowing into a radiator.
Yeah.
Recording it on an 8-track.
It's extreme new age. Mm-hmm.
If you listen carefully, you can hear the moment when the NYPD raid you at the end of the track.
Yeah.
The NYPD have come all the way to New Orleans.
Come all the way. Well, it's a federal job. It's a federal job, Ben. It's cross county. It's cross state lines. This one. it's that radical. What I'm doing with jazz in a basement in New Orleans.
Yeah.
That's the thing about music, isn't it? It's on the page, but it's just a series of notes and notations. But what you do with it is different, isn't it? Well, different. Well, different.
Well, you can play it right, or you can play it wrong. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things, yeah. But that's why they have conductors and stuff, isn't it? Because
I think most people don't really know why they have conductors.
No, they don't. No. I don't really know why.
It's
either.
Just so that people can clap at the beginning, isn't it? You know when to clap when
it started.
Yeah, and I think there's something about
it's because of the powerful baton lobby. I think that's the real reason.
Yeah,
they exist. Otherwise, how are they going to shift these batons? If no one needs them professionally.
Are they the same people that make kind of police batons?
They make police batons. They make relay race batons and orchestral batons.
They also make Brighton Rock, which is basically just an edible baton, isn't it? That's from their edible division.
That was just going to be a sort of novelty, wasn't it? Just as a sort of staff gift, and then it really took off.
It was at a baton. It was at one of the BatonCom conferences, wasn't it, in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember, was it Baton X? It was one of the big ones in San Diego.
It might have been Baton XP. I'm not sure.
I think it was Baton XP San Diego 96.
Mm. Yeah.
And it was just a snack. It was just like a fun idea for a snack they'd have on the way in.
Just to welcome the delegates.
And you played there, didn't you? You played your
well,
instrument.
Well, I was playing with, because I'd come straight from Baton Rouge. Hadn't I?
Of course, with it. You've been in Louisiana all this time, and that, of course, is where the HQ is of the Baton Lobby.
Exactly, Baton Rouge.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I was basically it was a Baton Rouge Cafe Rouge crossover. So we were doing a snack, a snack stand,
but so it'd
with,
be, yeah,
with the sensibility of Cafe Rouge.
Yeah,
so small round tables,
but you'd have a bit of Brighton Rock served in a cloche,
and some Brighton Rock served in a cloche, and it was a huge hit. And subsequent to that, Brighton. Some people from Brighton were there as well, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember why they were there.
Steve Brighton was there.
They embraced it, didn't they? And
here we are today.
Here we are today.
When I was at university, I found a secret toilet in the university campus.
Oh, yeah.
That were like, I mean, you know, you think you know what a nice toilet's like.
Oh, yeah.
It was basically where they did conferences. And what was great about it was not only were you getting a top-class toileting experience, clean, yeah, fragrant, beautifully appointed, kind of brass fittings, you would often leave, and in front of you would just be a plate of sandwiches that, like, a conference had left behind.
Wait, so is this in the toilet?
So it was like a little suite where there'd be like a room for a conference, and next to it, like a fine toilet where the conference attendees would repair to. And I would often go in post-conference, have an absolutely luxury shit, then leave, and ahead of me would just be a plate of Swiss rolls.
And you could start the whole process again.
And you were freshly voided and ready for just that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were like, you know what? I could get on with my day, or I could eat that entire platter of sandwiches and just wait and then go back into the toilet and just see how long I can carry that going.
And would you then take trips back to Cardiff to, you know, tell kids from your old school, you know, hey, you should really go to the LSE, guys, because, and here's why.
Yeah.
That's it. Nobody told me that at university you could shit and eat at the same time on someone else's dollar in relative luxury. Well,
that's the front cover of the LSE prospectus, isn't it, normally? It's just a picture of that toilet.
No, it's secret. That's the thing. No one knows about it apart from me. I mean, I've now broadcast it.
You know what? I once had access to a secret toilet in when I worked as a toy demonstrator in Harrods. I won't go into the whole toy demonstrating thing, but...
The Al-Fayed-only toilet.
Al-Fayed, it turned out, and the top toy demonstrator in Harrods toy department. And I was doing so well at demonstrating the toys that I got the key. Well. And here's what was weird about it. It had a private key, so any one person could go in, but once you were in, there were two cubicles.
But you found a way to use them both.
I did. It's quite a complicated move.
Mm-hmm. That's why your name's on a plaque in Hamleys to this day, isn't it?
I think it's mainly there so that if an assassin is after you, you can have that moment where they go cubicle by cubicle down the row.
It buys you a few moments.
It buys you a few moments.
Or, of course, you can take a guest.
Yeah. If you're...
You get a plus one with a key, right?
You get a plus one. So if you're having a meeting, for example, if you're having a very important meeting.
Yeah. Or you're doing a toy demonstration, you're that close to selling a little electronic radio-controlled plane, you can say, is the clincher.
But or if you're mid-sale, you can say, excuse me, sir. Now, I know that you're only half convinced that you want to buy these self-tying shoelaces at this point. I'm only halfway through my patter. I need to go to the bog. Shall we continue this in the toilet?
In the Shard, haven't they got toilets with like a glass side?
Have they?
Yeah.
So you can piss on London.
Yeah. Wow. They've got toilets because it's so high up so no one can see you. They've got like entirely glass-sided toilets.
Is that why the nation is so divided? People have been encouraged to piss on whole cities.
No, it's just that's because the bankers, you know, the fat cats are the bankers. They like to go to the top.
Yeah.
And go, for once, rather than metaphorically pissing on London, I look as if I'm literally doing it. Pissing on society. Look at you. Yeah?
Okay.
Yeah. Is it that? You know, the worst designed urinal I've ever been in my life.
You've been in?
No, I mean,
you've ever stayed in.
was the one that I fell into in Berlin. It was very poorly designed. I don't know if it's still like this, but Cambridge Station on the platform one, there was a urinal where the metal sheet that sort of comprised the sort of main bit of the urinal in front of you was completely 100% reflective, basically a mirror. And just at sort of willy level, which is guaranteed that you could just see your own willy, fresh, just full colour, fresh, perfect image.
Stop saying fresh.
Because it doesn't sound fresh. Even though you put that word in every other word, it's not a fresh image.
Methinks ye just protesteth too much, Esther. Saying fresh FSS about your willy. Just fresh and clean and just a sense of breezy,
straight
on the
4-hour train from Manchester.
but not only your willy, but all the willies of everyone down the line next to you. Absolute clean, just HD, surround, just perfect, crisp image. 4K row of dicks. Here are your dicks. Look at your dicks. It's a dick check. Dick check stop. If you were a GP, next to me, I'd be like, "While you're here, mate, you just have a look."
Well, there was a GP on the other side of the. It wasn't a real mirror,
glass.
Was it? It was 1-way glass, 2-way glass, whatever it's called.
That's how they do their screening.
So sometimes you get a letter the next day saying, "We think your penis may be too fresh. We'd like you to come in for a meeting."
It was actually visually minty, which was quite concerning.
It had a really spearmint vibe to it. And we'd just like to come and check you out and maybe...
It should be peppermint at that time of day.
It should be peppermint.
Come to see us.
Yeah. And it might be a simple case of you've just got a couple of Tic Tacs down there. They ever come lodged down there. If you had some old Tic Tacs in a pocket and there's a hole in your pocket and a hole in your boxes, some Tic Tacs will sometimes work their way down.
So how did we stop talking about your mirror toilet?
We've got to stop talking about toilets, please. Everyone, okay?
So your way of stopping us talking about toilets was to talk about toilets.
It's probably the worst urinal you've ever been in. What about the best one?
Gather around, because do I have a story to tell you. I once decided that the space I could work best in mm-hmm. London, because sometimes I'll go, I can't work in this space anymore. So I've settled on Costa, but it took me a long time to get there, mate. Mm-hmm. Quite a journey. And one of the places I tried for a bit was the top floor cafe of John Lewis in Sloane Square.
Really?
Oh,
fancy pants.
So John Lewis is a department store, and it's got a nice one in Sloane Square, which is only a few stops away from me on the tube. And at the top floor... And I found this on Google, actually, the guy, because I went on a Reddit or something about people discussing good spaces to work as freelance.
Is this happening for you, Mike?
Yeah.
Sorry, Henry. Me and Mike just both experienced an incredible sound glitch.
You did a Henry remix. It went freelance.
Oh man, it's all the work again.
You did a Henry remix. Henry remix.
Top floor cafe of John Lewis. John Lewis. John Lewis.
Henry Remix. Henry Remix.
John Lewis.
Henry Remix.
John Lewis.
Hello there. Yes. I have a query about this. So-called lifetime guarantee on this cast iron cookware. In the event of my death, maybe as part of a home invasion or simply an accident with a rake, or a final face-off with a huge eagle, its wingspan as big as a man, does the guarantee pass on to my firstborn male offspring? Oh, it does. Excellent. Excellent. That's what I'd expect from such a well-trusted British brand.
So I think I found it on a Reddit thing. I was trying to, like, about good places to work in London as freelancers. And there's lots of factors like, you know, lighting and plugs.
Yeah.
And toilets.
Mm-hmm.
And also how brazen you can be with the staff, I think, is the big one for me.
Yes.
How much can you eke out that single drink?
The ratio of your brazenness to their intolerance as a freelancer.
That is the key ratio.
Delicate balance.
But what you want is for them to be working for an institution big enough that they don't give a shit.
Mm. Yeah.
That's why Costa has ended up being perfect for me. It has to be a large, faceless institution where they're all just working on the clock. They don't care. They're not passionate about coffee. They're all studying or doing something else.
Yeah.
Well, what you don't want is a small, family-run business where you're literally bleeding them dry. Yeah. Where you're actively taking food out of the mouths of their children. Sometimes literally.
So, Henry, are you telling me that you don't care at all about the family of Don Costa.
And his 74 children. There's a reason why he's had to grow that chain so big.
Henry, it is time for you to meet Don Costa.
We are taking you to the fourth toilet. Come this way.
Take this bejeweled key. I tell you what's been bugging me lately. The fact that there's an element of conversation about spies that we haven't shared with our Patreon listeners yet.
Oh, I see. Bugging as in when a spy might bug a room more.
Exactly, yeah.
Did you realise you'd done that, Henry?
Yeah. No, of course I did, yeah. I was on that. Oh, God, I can't prove that. I'll never be able to prove that, will I?
I think it's for the listener to make up their own mind, isn't it?
Here's an interesting offshoot of the spying world. Yeah. Industrial espionage.
Ooh.
Over to you, Mike. Is that when, like, Costa spies on Starbucks?
Starbucks has got a brand new bean.
Is that
they
why?
They want the secret recipe. They've got a.
They want to reverse engineer the chocolate sort of dust that Starbucks put on top of the
cappuccino. Starbucks have discovered a new way of frothing milk that's 5 times more efficient, 10 times more frothy, and the froth stays frothy for longer. And if they launch it, then it's game, set, and match. They've just won coffee the world over. Unless Costa Coffee can install an agent on the inside.
What, someone that spends all their time in a Costa almost every day?
In the testing Costa, where they test out the new frothing gear.
So do you think, Henry, that might be your calling in the world of espionage?
I think to be honest, I have obviously been waiting for the tap on the shoulder in Costa.
Yeah. Well, from a waiter saying, are you going to order something? You've been here for 4 hours. All you bought was a bottle of water.
And that was from a baker's down the road.
And give us back our toilet key. We know you've got our toilet key. Give it back. Oh, it's a Cafe Nero toilet key, isn't it?
It is.
That's true. I've got a key from their enemy, from their second worst enemy after Starbucks. I've shown my loyalty, I think, to Costa. I think, you know, I could be, yeah. Obviously, they'll be worrying I'm a double agent.
Mm-hmm. Got to make sure they've never seen you come in with a box of pastries from Gail's Bakery, for example.
You, Judas.
It's in secret in the corner and washed down with your Costa coffee.
That would never happen, Mike. You know what? I did that. Yeah, I do that. I will eat a cross off from a superior baker in a Costa. I don't know what the legality is on that.
Highly legal.
Do you think it's illegal?
It's profoundly unethical. Your pastry ethics are in the gutter.
I also later on that same day, I went and bought a cinnamon crumb cake from Gales and brought that back and ate that in Costa as well. I had 2 Gales products in Costa. So maybe that does make me a sort of double agent. I don't know.
Or at the very least a saboteur, perhaps. I'm not quite sure.
I was using a bit of slightly spy techniques because I was using a newspaper to cover the Gales wrapping, the Gales paper, the Gales logo. Honestly, I deconstructed the box because I bought a cheese and ham croissant from Gales. And basically, it was actually a day when I was editing the podcast. Yeah. I don't know, do you want to let them see up the wizard, up behind the wizard's curtain on this kind of stuff or not?
Henry, are you aware of the Pompidou section?
Hello. Now it's time for Pompidou section. Pompidou. On a day when I'm doing something quite hard like that, as a little treat, I'll get myself a cheese and ham croissant from Gales to kick off the day. But
quite hard.
But
quite hard.
Yeah. What? Are you saying it's not hard?
It's not hard.
A day down the editing pit? You think there are risks of injury?
risks of cringe.
If, you know, someone like me, if you cringe unexpectedly and you're not sitting in the right position, you could put a shoulder out.
Lose a tooth.
But basically, they didn't have any of the normal bags, so they put it in a gift box, complete with a sort of bow for some reason. So it was literally the worst possible situation for me, you know, because I had to secrete that Cheesham croissant into Costa. So this is a sort of like this is maybe an example of the daily life, the daily espionage that we all do, the daily spy work, you know, dissembling things like that.
Oh, he's getting the.
I'm getting the call.
He's getting the call.
I'm getting the
is
call.
It on the red
it's
phone.
The Danish Secret Service.
Imagine if Henry had picked it up and just spoken in fluent Russian for a minute and then put the phone down.
Yeah, do you know it?
Спасибо. Pavlova, Nedvedev? Nedvedev, Pavlova. Pavlova, Nedvedev. Petrovsky, Nedvedev, Stalingrad. Petrovsky, Crimea. Putin, Nedvedev. Potemkin. Potemkin, da. Stalin, Potemkin. Nedvedev, Nedvedev, Nedvedev. Potemkin, Stalingrad. Da.
Well, we don't have to imagine it now. Was that you ordering 50 pavlovas?
So I had to deconstruct the box. I'm feeling it's not a great anecdote, but I had to, it was in a gift box, I had to deconstruct the box so they wouldn't see. And also, at lunch, I had to whop out my Tupperware, which contains a pasta salad I'd made for myself.
Wow.
But basically, my situation with the Costa staff is...
They loathe you?
I don't want to say loathe, but put it this way. At the end of the day, Costa closes at 6. Mm-hmm. I close up my laptop and I get things kind of pretty much closed up and ready to go at 6. At which point...
You hide under the table?
I hide under the table and I bed in to get my 12 hours sleep. At that point, I tend to... Basically, there's a bit of a grey area I'm in at the moment with the Costa staff, which is at the end of the day, I like to go to the toilet before I go home, but they're obviously trying to clean up...
You're trying to save on toilet paper. Everyone understands that. Do it on the clock.
Can I just say, Henry, this is not a grey area for the staff. They're very black and white about how they feel about this, I would imagine.
I like to go to the toilet before I go home so I can enjoy the walk home. Also, save on toilet paper. Save on... soap and tap water and so on. But what they like to do is they like to clean up and get everything ready so they can be out the door at 6. So
those silly scamps wanting to leave when they're not being paid for it anymore.
And so at the end of the day, I'll close up my stuff and I'll be like, have they cleaned the toilet or not? Do they? Not sure. And anyway, so that'll be going over my head as I finish off my toilet. I'll then flush and go.
Emerging at 6:15 to the fierce gaze of 4 Costa workers.
And I'll say to them, you still here? As they stand queued up next to the door. Are you guys still here? Oh, we should get some sleep. Oh, go on. Work. All work and no play makes whatever your names are a dull boy and girl. Because we don't know each other by name or anything, but there's definitely a
Oh, sense. They've got a name for you. the 6 p.m. turd monster.
But what I've got is this thing now, which is with me eating there, I know I'm not supposed to eat there.
Dr. Sunset Shite.
I know I'm not supposed to be eating stuff from outside of Costa. I do have it prepared, though, what I'll say if they do ever challenge me on it, which is, come on, guys, though, the food here is rank. except for the mini panettone, which I will eat twice a week. But that is the exception. I don't know how you've pulled that off. The mini panettone is extraordinary. I don't know how on earth you've done that. But you can't literally be expecting me to eat that food. Come on, guys. That's my one line I've got ready.
I think their response might be, you don't have to come here.
But I do because it's the only cafe... it's the only chain cafe in London which has good, sturdy, square tables, which is what I need to work on.
Perfectly square.
perfectly square, chunky wood, and also the sense of not exactly desolation, but there's something about
the transitory
liminal vibe in a Costa that I find perfect for work for concentrating.
Because you feel both alive and dead at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get that.
Which is the space in which it's best to work.
Through that space, God can be channeled.
Exactly. But no, the thing is that, my worry with the food thing is that I don't want to be too brazen. I think they know I'm eating stuff from Gales, but I did, for example, that gift box that I got the croissant in, I collapsed it and I put it under the newspaper so they couldn't see it. Because what I don't want, I think it's that thing where...
They saw you but they couldn't see it afterwards. Yeah.
Exactly.
And heard you noisily crushing the cardboard box.
That's the thing, though, Mike. They think they know I'm doing it, but what I don't want to do is put them in a position where I'm being so brazen about it that they have to say something to me. Because once they've said it, you can't eat stuff from Gales here. And also, you're eating a pasta salad here every day that you brought in from elsewhere.
No, we can't heat up your soup in our microwave. That's not what it's for.
You know what? I asked them for their cutlery to use my cheese and ham croissant as well the other day. I'm getting closer and closer to the edge of how far I can push it. But I used their cutlery to eat a cheese and ham croissant that we made at Gale down the road.
Death wish move, I'd say.
It is, isn't it? It's like I'm pushing it. But what I'm really worried about is I push it to the point where they say something. And then it's like, because they've said it, it's that thing of, do they know I know that they know? You know, I know that they know I'm doing it. They know.
That you know.
That I probably know.
That they know.
I'm doing it. Yeah. But do they know that I know that they know that I know I'm doing it or whatever? You know, like there's a level where it's like, now it's out. We have to say stop it. And once they've said stop it, if I'm then, you know, when I'm eating that pasta, when I'm putting the dressing on, or when I'm... like when I'm carving...
When you're assembling the food. carving the ham on leg that you take with you.
When I'm encasing the salmon in the pastry.
Sharpening the carving knife. Asking the children to stand clear.
When I'm beheading the lamb.
And draining it.
When I'm hanging the boar up, upside down, obviously. I'm hanging the boar.
You've pulled off the hide and you're slapping thick wads of salt against its exposed.
When you're fennelling the sweetbreads.
When I'm rolling that squid arm in the panko breadcrumbs. Yeah.
You've finally built that smokehouse in the corner by the ladies' loo.
Why is the ladies' loo full of delicious applewood smoke?
And when I'm obviously lowering the visor and stoking up the mini flamethrower, yeah. and when I'm doing that flourish on the tablecloth, the whipping the tablecloth out and onto the surface, clipping it at the edges with tablecloth clips.
When you're inviting the elderly French maitre d' that you've employed as a personal maitre d' to come and oversee the meal,
and he's not sure where he's supposed to decant the Beaujolais,
yeah. He's confused, and at this point, obviously, the Danish ambassador is wondering: does he sit now, or does he wait for the string quartet to finish? At that point, obviously, Tony Blair's knocking around. He's doing the after dinner speech. He's knocking around.
Well, he's dropped his watch in the chocolate fountain. He's not sure how to get it out. They'll make an even more mess.
And he knows that, luckily though, he knows he's got a cool £500,000 coming to him at the end of today's gig, which he can put towards his next watch.
Yeah, which you've told him to invoice to Costa Coffee. Planet Tony Department.
Yes, Tony, you will be getting £500,000 worth of mini panettones.
Yes, I do. I abbreviate that mini panettone to pounds in my emails, yes. Think about it. All the letters from the word pounds is in mini panettone, isn't it?
Apart from the U.
And possibly the D.
And the S. But this is great exposure for you, Tony.
Yeah, but if they were to bring any of that up, then it would be awkward.
Exactly.
Henry Packer, great Londoner of his time, a modern-day Dickens Christopher Wren, and Madame Tussaud. Shares with us a little snippet of his rarefied life in the metropolitan utopia that is London, a place most of us can only dream of.
I was sitting in a parked car in Hampstead Heath, in Hampstead Heath car park.
Waiting for an informant.
Yeah, it certainly would have seemed like that.
Are we talking dead of night or...?
Dead of afternoon. Okay. It was right on the mid-afternoon, sort of, on the stroke of mid-afternoon.
That's very much Henry Packer lull time, isn't it? That's Henry Packer just thinking about cake.
I was in my cake lull. Mm. Worst time to meet an informant for me. Because...
Unless they've got some cake on them.
Unless they're carrying a briefcase with very, very, very sensitive information in it and a cake. Those are the two things I'll need.
Unmarked slices of cake.
I'll need unmarked slices of cake. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Untraceable. The safest way to do that is you make it two or three types of cake at the same time. So it'd be partially brownie, partially Battenberg.
Small denominations, right?
Yeah. Laundered, ideally, as well. Pre-laundered. Yeah.
Well, so someone's already eaten them. Pre-eaten. Untraceable cake.
You need to... pre-eaten, pre-digested, reformed into a completely untraceable and almost completely inedible sort of lump of espionage-ready cake. Yeah. I was wearing, clothes for a hike,
right?
And a small Toyota.
You're wearing a small Toyota.
Well, that's all. That's all I had around me at the time.
Do you think everyone's ever hiked across Hampstead Heath? Well, this is like how Americans use the word hike to mean, you know, a short walk to their car is a hike.
Mm.
Whereas in Britain, a hike needs to involve, you know, a thermos, ideally a pub lunch.
Yeah. Fog. A laminated map.
Saying hello to passers-by.
A family argument.
A dog bite.
No, but going to Hampstead Heath, that is what London is. Yeah, for us, that is. Yeah, that's the great outdoors. Mm. That's almost like journeying into the heart of Mordor. Okay. For us, if you're going to go across Hampstead Heath, you need to be prepared.
So you're ready to commune with nature, gearing up.
I'm gearing up. I'm ready, but I'm waiting for the weather to become more clement.
Okay. And that can take days sometimes, can't it?
You don't want to. Do you think you could genuinely, honestly tell me you could walk across Hampstead Heath in a drizzle and make it out the other side alive? Bear in mind, there are some areas of Hampstead Heath where you can't see into people's houses. that's how big it is.
You could be up to 150 yards away from an ice cream van if you lose your way.
Yeah. I mean, you might be in a position where you have to use a Stately Homes toilet and cafe. So I'm parked up. I'm waiting for the drizzle to subside. Mm. I reckon it's autumn. There's an autumnal feel. It's not winter. I'm not mad. I'm not,
is there a documentary film crew with you to...
Of course.
The journey?
Of course. Yeah. I've got sponsors. I've got documentary makers. Obviously, I'm raising money for charity. It's a big thing. To take on walking across Hampstead Heath, you know. Bearing in mind, I'm entering at the South Point and I'm hoping to finish the day in the Kedwood House Cafe.
And the clock's ticking, right? Because there's a...
The clock's ticking.
There's an army veteran as well who's competing against you from Norway.
Well, the Norwegian expedition, of course, controversially, are setting off from the Gospeloke.
From the
tube station. They're taking on the Gospeloke side, which certainly has never... Well,
some people don't believe it exists.
Well, some people don't, exactly.
If you go from that end, it's very hard to get any distance without, you know, bumping into a Michael Palin, an Alan Yentob.
A Melvin Bragg.
Yeah.
At that time of the year, they're hungry, aren't they? And they're trying to build up body fat for a hibernation. Very dangerous to encounter at that time.
Yeah. And the advice is just punch him in the nose.
Don't go near the Yentob cubs.
they look delightful, don't they? They look cute,
adorable.
But if it But if Yentob, he'll probably be off either hunting or defecating. If Yentob gets wind that you're fooling around with his cubs, he will come at you hard. If you make it to Kenwood House Cafe, the idea is you can take some selfies, enjoy lunch, but you can't stay there too long. This is the risk. This is the reason that there are corpses littering. Yeah. The Kenwood House Cafe and the grounds of Kenwood House, there are corpses which it's too dangerous to remove them, so they're just there forever. Because the point is, you have to bear in mind, you need to get back to Gospel Oak by 11 p.m. minimum if you're going to get the last overground.
Back to West London.
And if you're going to get back to West London and Hampstead Heath by 11:30 p.m. minimum.
They close the gates on the car park.
They close the gates on the car park.
Bloody hell.
And so it's tense. So obviously I was gearing up for that.
Yeah.
And I was sitting looking out on quite a glum scene, you know, grey, one of those grey drizzly London days where, you know, it's hard to tell where the sky ends and the ground begins. Anyway, I looked out and what did I see in front of me? But the broad back, shoulders, upper body, anoract of one of the, well, I'd say one of the world's greatest ever actors. It's not an exaggeration to say. And I had two, oh God, so I've just realised that we decided, didn't we, that last week's episode had potentially been quite urine heavy.
Oh no.
I'd forgot.
Oh no.
Is this a story about you pissing on a national treasure in Hampstead Heath car park?
No, basically he was doing a piss, and he was stood right in front of the car.
You've not named him. And
I have not named him for good reason, because I'm not sure if I am going to name him. But he was doing a piss.
Anthony Hopkins,
right? I'm not going to answer that question, but it wasn't Hopkins. He was pissing, and he didn't know that I was... He just assumed that this is a load of empty parked cars.
Steve Buscemi?
No.
Derek Jacobi?
No. And this person didn't know that I was... So what do you do in that situation? You're sat there, and the National Treasure is pissing in front of you. And I am... And but you know what I did? I just thought, I sat back and enjoyed the show, and I thought, I've got front row seats here to a solo performance. There are probably people, rich business people, who would pay a lot of money to have this mocked up.
Mark Rylance.
No.
Patrick Stewart.
No. I'm not sure if I... Can I reveal? I mean, he wasn't illegal what he was doing.
Sounds like it was. It might have been. Getting your wanger out in a public car park and pissing all over it. It's possible that might have been in contravention of some local bylaws. Pissing all over a Toyota. Was it a Toyota?
He wasn't facing the car.
He wasn't pissing onto your windscreen.
No, he was facing away from the car. But also, he was doing it in that classic British... So I'm giving you a clue there. But in that classic sort of British sort of no-nonsense... And he was going, come on, I'm coming, darling. Yep, just give me a second. Yeah. You know, that sort of no-nonsense. I was doing a piss, no big deal.
Ah, so a sort of Ralph Fiennes kind of vibe.
Maybe we could open it up to the listeners. But I suppose it would just be them suggesting a series of actors' names and me saying no, and eventually yes. Do you want me to tell you who it is?
Perhaps you could not say no if we get it.
I won't say no if you get it.
Rowan Atkinson.
No.
Ian McKellen.
No.
Ian McShane.
No.
Shane McKeon.
No, but I like the way you're thinking. No, it was... It was...
We could always beep that.
But I tell you what, it was quite cool, though, just because it's quite unusual to see a celebrity and for them to be doing a piss. And Amy was with me, and we both just went, this is amazing. And he's doing a piss. And we just sat there and watched him doing a piss. It was sort of incredible. It was kind of amazing, actually.
Mike, have you ever seen a celebrity sluicing out some...
No, I haven't. I don't know how I'd react. Did you get a spoon out of your backpack and sort of take a little sample of piss-soaked earth? And take it back?
Of course I bloody...
Piss-soaked England?
Mm. course I did.
Yeah. You're not made of stone.
Mike, here's a thought experiment for you.
Yeah.
If you came home, you've gone out for a walk with Pam, and you got home, and bold as brass is pissing on your front door.
Yeah. The tale as old as time.
Genuinely, how do you think you'd react? Because obviously, if it were any old Tom, Dick or Harry,
yeah,
I can imagine your reaction being quite curt.
Yeah, well, there's a very clear sign on my front door saying that I'm authorised to use lethal force in the event of finding someone pissing on the front door. Also, no junk mail, please.
Yeah, you've got no junk mail or actor pick, haven't you? You've had that specially made.
But if it were, there would be that moment of going, ah, oh, which I think would diffuse some of the anger. You know, I don't think you'd be as quick to anger.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. Because you'd see the back of him initially, wouldn't you? So you wouldn't necessarily be sure who you're dealing with. So I think, yeah, initially you'd go into attack position, Pam and I both. And I suspect the reveal that it was... And so I think I'd want to know how he'd come to this.
before you gave Pam the signal.
Yeah, I do. Well, Pam gets pretty antsy if someone's at the front door anyway, even if she knows them well. It takes her a while to work it out before she's had a good old sniff. I know for a fact she's never met. So I think yeah, Pam would snap his dick off in half a second flat. That's the trouble.
Yeah.
Pam is the wild factor there.
So that was this month's bonus episode. Thanks for listening. We're off for February. See you in March.
Bye.
Thank you.